Thank you for downloading the Three Beards Soccer Podcast, a Baltimore-based soccer show focused on the English Premier League and the footballing world. Please follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, username at Three Beards Pod.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Three Beards Soccer Podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller, with your other host, Ken Lee, and also we have Tyler behind the glass. How are we doing today, Ken?
Never better.
And you, Tyler, how are you today, sir?
I am doing great, sir.
All right, so we had a pretty awesome weekend. I don't know about you guys, about your how the babies are doing. How are they doing for you, Ken? How are the babies treating you?
I think the one is kind of sick. The young one.
Oh, yeah, both of mine are sick.
There's something going around. I'll go ahead and blame your family.
That's fine. We did, your wife took pictures, and your kids were around them, so that's probably what happened. They probably got whatever my kids have. And then my wife got sick today, too. So, you know, it didn't stop me from watching games, because I'm, you know, I got to get through that kind of stuff, you know? I was behind a couple games. I had to watch the Chelsea game today, you know? So, we got through it, but I'm glad to hear that your family is on the mend, Ken, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, you know. In times of illness, the only thing to do is just hope that your team wins. And, you know, luckily, my Arsenal comes through when they need to.
Yeah, it seems like it's a time for illness in general. But overall, this weekend, you had mostly comfortable wins across the board. A lot of teams that were ailing are now kind of picking it up as we get into December, which is a crucial stretch. And we'll start with a team that was ailing, kind of, had lost two of their last three games. Manchester United wins 4-1 over Newcastle at home, and they went down in this one in the 14th minute. It was real early, Ken. And I got a little scared. I won't lie to you. I got a little scared.
Yeah, there was a little glimmer of hope for everyone not a Man U fan when Newcastle came out, and they looked better, you know. It was deserved of one goal at the very, like, not the least, but they deserved to be, at least have the one goal. Could have been 1-1, maybe, but it was pretty nice to see him. I like seeing Mouse sweat a little bit.
Yeah, well, there's no real difference in his demeanor when somebody scores. He's just so grumpy at Man United. He's so grumpy, man. He has been grumpy from the beginning. I don't know, something happened to him. Maybe he misses somebody to tangle with, you know? Like, even before this match, I was reading some of the comments that Mao has said about Benitez in the past, Rafa being the Newcastle manager. Like, after Rafa took over Inter, Mao had just won the treble. And had won Champions League, everything, and moved to Real Madrid. Rafa took over, and I think he was sacked, Ken, within 6 months?
It was quick.
I think it was December that he got sacked.
I don't think he unpacked his suitcase yet. I mean, it was fast.
It was after the Club World Championship, because they lost that to, like, I want to say a Brazilian team,
maybe?
It
was a South American team, I want to say.
Yeah, it has to be, I think, because the Club World Championship is the winner of all the continental matches. So.
True story.
Yeah, so, I mean, Rafa got sacked there, and Mao had a lot to say about it. Said basically, he literally said he took the best team in Europe and crashed them. Because I think they finished in sixth place. And then Rafa took over Real Madrid after Mao was at Real Madrid. And he ended up getting sacked, I think, by December again. And in this case, I don't know if you remember this, Ken, but Real Madrid were disqualified from the whatever their domestic cup is. I forget what it's called. The Copa del Rey, maybe? They got disqualified because they fielded a player who was on suspension.
No, I don't remember that. But, I mean,
yes.
I wouldn't put it past some European club to do something crazy like that.
Yeah, basically Real Madrid had transferred a player in who was on a suspension. They didn't know it. They fielded him. They won 3-0, I think, and then they were disqualified from the competition because the guy had been suspended. So Jose poking at him previously, but in the build-up to this one, they were both kind of like, oh, the game's on the field. We don't really need to talk about the managers. It's not a big deal. And it kind of ended up being a drubbing, but Newcastle showed up early, and they looked like they had a spark of hope until the new man, the man back from injury, Ken, Paul Pogba, started pulling strings.
Yeah, it was clear to see that that is exactly what they have been missing, and that's why they have not been looking that great the last couple of weeks, really since he's been gone. But now that he's back, I mean, just the run of play, the passing's different. It's better. I think they're unstoppable again.
Yeah, that move that he made, he did a step over, and then he cut it out wide before he crossed it. He was right on the edge of the 18. He crossed it in, and Martial came in hammered it home, man. That was a sick move, man.
It was a defensive toying, and it was just kind of, you know, for the rest of the league, like, you know, it just shows what one player actually can do for a club, even at the likes of a Man United, where they have all the resources needed to bring in several players. It's still Pogba is of that caliber that he does change the pace and the way that Man United flow from the midfield on, and just opens up gaps and allows for opportunity, and they're back to scoring 4 goals in a game. And this is just a little sweeter for you guys because it was you were down 1-0.
Yeah, it's good to see bouncing back from a little bit of, I guess you call it adversity. I mean, goals happen in games, so
I wouldn't call it adversity.
I call it adversity, but it was nice to see them immediately go on the attack after losing 2 of their last 3 and not really look phased. Pogba brings something different. I think people were expecting him when he joined for 86 million or whatever it was, being the most expensive player ever, that he was going to score a whole bunch of goals. But what he actually brings is more of keeping the ball and winning the ball. He's so good at keeping the ball on the dribble, with his passing. Like, he can shield the ball extremely well. He can do, you know, he has skills. He's not going to score 20 goals, which is what people expected from an 86 million pound center midfielder, but he does everything else, and he can score you an odd goal. But yeah, Ken, his ability to improve the flow just by keeping the ball and then creatively passing out of situations and creating things that weren't there before was sorely missed.
No, yeah, it was from the jump. I texted you, maybe it was in a group message, like Pogba, it was definitely a noticeable thing that Pogba was very, very missed at Man United, and I'm sure that the fans and the club alike could not be happier to have him back. And it just makes it makes Man United, you know, back to the beginning of the season where they're, you know, a fearful team to play. They had a couple weeks where it's like, all right, we can get some points off these guys.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's really important when you're in the league. We talked about it last week, and we'll talk about it again when we talk about the City game, but how the other teams perceive you, how they're going to set up against you, and mentally, whether or not they think they can actually get points off of you. So yeah, having Pogba on the field, and then Ken, after United scored 3 times, and Pogba was subbed off, they might have scored 4, I'm trying to see when Ibrahimovic came on, but Ibrahimovic comes back.
And that goon tries a scissor-like attempt, and I don't know if the goalie was like trying to make like a theatrical save or not, but I mean, I guess when Ibra's on the field, you just don't know what's gonna happen. My favorite part about Ibra being on the pitch wasn't anything that he did on the pitch, but it was his post-match interview. Did you listen to it?
I did. It was hilarious.
That lady asked him, you know, was there ever a doubt that you were going to recover a month early? He said, what did he say? Because lions, they don't recover like humans.
Yes, he said lions don't recover like humans, and then he left. Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
What a goofball. Get out of here.
You know, it's really funny to see his personality, because if you remember, like, 5 or 6 years ago, he was bouncing around from top club to top club. He always had, and he was kind of viewed as a pariah, especially after his misstep with Pep Guardiola at Barcelona, where he was brought in, and he doesn't fit that speedy play. He's huge, and he's not, like, unbelievably fast. That's not how he scores goals. He didn't fit in, and people were kind of like, well, he doesn't mesh well. That's why he keeps moving on. I haven't really seen that. I mean, he is, you know, older, wiser, etc., but he's an interesting character, and if you watch the way he played after he came on, he played in that 10 spot, Ken, where Mkhitaryan's been failing, and he was trying all kinds of things. I mean, we were up 4-1, but he was trying, like, you know, little chips and
one-twos. First pass he made, he didn't even look. He just knew that the winger was going to be there. I mean, the guy is good. He knows what he can do, and more importantly, I think, to your point, he understands how old he is, and he knows what he's capable of doing today, not what he's capable of doing yesteryear. So that's very, very valuable in a player to not only still have some skill left, but to know that you're 33, 34, however, 45.
36.
I don't know how old he
36.
Is. 50 years old now? I don't know.
36.
But it's good to know, like, he's not going to lose the skill, but he's going to lose the pace, and he's going to lose the strength and agility to do things, but he's still going to have the touch, is
yeah.
for sure. I mean, he couldn't score a goal. I mean, he did score goals, but, I mean, he missed so many goals last season, so I don't think that, you know, that's going to be what Mal brings him on for. But just to be able to have a Zlatan on the bench, that's a pretty good pet to have.
Oh, yeah. I think it's essential what you're saying about knowing your role. And he knows that he's not the number nine, or at least he's not supposed to be. At the same time, you could see him, if Lukaku goes on a cold streak, you could see Zlatan playing in a big game over Lukaku just because of who he is. You know, like, he can score big games, and he is dangerous.
I'd put Zlatan in over Lukaku if Lukaku started running his mouth 1 week just to set him in his
yeah.
place, you know? I mean, it's just good to have Ibra. I mean, there are worse people to have on your bench than a 36, what do you say, 36, 37?
36-year-old
36, Ibra.
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'd take him.
Yeah.
I don't think any club in the league wouldn't take him. Like,
yeah, he's definitely a championship piece, you know what I mean? Like, he's a guy that can put you over the top in big competitions. Serial winner, has won just about every league he's been in. I don't think there's been a league that he's been in that he didn't win. And he's just been, you know, he knows how to get victories and how to keep the press off of people's backs with his own absorption, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, they are obsessed with him. He makes these ridiculous statements, and it can kind of deflect. And that can do things if, you know, one of the younger players is having a tough time. All of a sudden, Zlatan says something ridiculous, and that's what people write about.
Yep.
So I like that, too. But anyway, Manchester United wins 4-1. Good to see them in form again, at least for me. Maybe not for you.
No, I'd like to see them lose the rest of the season.
Yeah, I know you would. I know you would, Ken. But moving on to a team that we would like to see lose and just don't seem to be able to do that, Ken. Manchester City wins 2-0 over Leicester. This game, I thought Leicester had a shot. I really did.
Well, I thought they did have a shot to go in, and I think that the referee allowed the shot to go away because I'm of the opinion that that was a red card.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
tackle on Jamie Vardy, that's a
red card.
To me, I'm not going to say 100% red card because there is that idea that Stones was tracking back. But now Vardy had beat everybody and company was beat and he did exactly what he wanted to do and he took the player out and he got really lucky. I think that would have changed. You got to play man down for the next 89 minutes. I mean,
yeah.
That would have been tough, I mean, against any club, much less a club like Leicester, who was going to play you on the counter, and to lose a piece of your defense that, you know, from every time I've seen Manchester City's defense be kind of attacked and put on the brink of things, they don't look that great. So to go down, I mean, that would have been bad news. And to me, I'm on the red card side of that, not the definite yellow.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. The first time I saw it, I was like, okay, what's the rule of law here? And the commentators are kind of like, well, he had cover on the way over. That cover was, Ken, probably like 8 feet away.
The cover was
away,
on the wing. And
it was coming in, and Vardy is really fast.
Oh, he's crazy fast. And it's a definite red. It was
yeah.
intent to, I know I'm not going to get the ball. I'm taking the man out. And I'm just going to hope that the referee doesn't see it.
That's a professional foul. That's another thing. It is a professional foul. In that case, I believe that would have been a red card. Both of us are coming from a place where we definitely biased, and we'd like to see Manchester City
lose. I'm 100%
lose,
being biased to it,
sure.
But I don't think that any City fan out there is going to say, without a shadow of a doubt, that it was 100% not a red card.
Yeah. I just can't get beyond that being a red card. That being said, after that, I mean, Leicester played their normal game. They allowed City to have the ball and tried to counter. After that, though, they were pretty impotent, unfortunately.
Oh my God, yeah, Man City was toying with them inside the 18 all of the time. When you're stringing together 4 to 6 passes inside the 18 and you're putting the keeper, you know, to work within that time frame, like, that's a problem. And I'm nothing against Leicester. It's all too... how well and how fluid City is playing right now. And then you've got Kevin De Bruyne coming in and scoring another 25-yard rocket. To me, I mean, and I'm going to end talking about Man City right now because I hate Manchester City. And I hate Pep Guardiola and anyone who wears that silly color blue. Let's not get anything twisted here. This is not a pro Man City podcast, but Kevin De Bruyne right now to me, and if somebody has a better idea, please shoot it to me. But Kevin De Bruyne is the best player in the world right now. There's no question to me.
Yeah. I think we said that last week, and I got
solidified it this week.
Yeah, I got a little bit of stick. There's some people talking about Messi and the way he's playing in Barcelona.
I'm so sick of hearing about Messi.
I mean, I think Messi is the absolute man. Don't get me wrong, but the way that De Bruyne is scoring and assisting goals, and the way that he's putting together the City team. First of all, the City team right now is the best team in the world. They have, 16 wins in all competitions? 17?
Oh, there's no question that right now, the form and the way they're playing shows, and there's no way to argue that they're the best team in the world. And they have a Kevin De Bruyne.
Against it, yeah. Yeah, and I think that because he's the best player on the best team, and the things that he's doing, I mean, Messi is scoring goals and doing his thing. I don't think he's had a couple games where he's been amazing, but he's not even at the levels that he was at before, at least not at this very moment. And Kevin De Bruyne, the levels that he's at, the goals that he's scoring, that goal against Chelsea, and the amount of goals that he's setting up and scoring at the same time, like, there's just nobody influencing games like him right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's scoring goals out of nothing. Like, he's pushing the ball off with the outside of his foot and shooting it from
anywhere
outside of the box. It doesn't matter.
That ball is smashed near post, Ken. That means, I mean, when you score a near post goal, the thing
that
is amazing
strike.
To me is that these goalies are enormous. In the Prem, almost every goalie is over 6'3". Schmeichel, in this case, I think he's 6'4". Like, these guys do not let up near post goals from 25 out. Because they're so big, they guard that part of the goal. But this ball was hit so hard that Schmeichel couldn't even do anything about it. They're just absolutely annihilated. And he's done that. He did the same thing against Peter Cech, who is 6'7". Like, they don't allow long-range goals like that unless they're absolutely destroyed. And that's what – De Bruyne is not scoring, like, a magic wonder goal one time. He's scoring, like, three or four of these in the league so far. He's been absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, no argument here except for the fact that, full disclosure, I hate Manchester City.
Well, speaking of Manchester City, right, so they have 11 wins on the trot in the league. Is that correct? I believe so.
I don't even know. It's a lot. Because
they have their 11 wins, one draw, and I think their first game of the season was against Everton. That was a draw, I think. But anyway, they're closing in on Tyler's Chelsea's record here, right, of wins in the Premier League in a row. I think it's 13. And I believe City's at 11. And, Ken, they don't really play anybody for the next three matches.
No, I mean, for the foreseeable future, I mean, until somebody cracks the code that is Manchester City, I mean, they're going to continue winning. The job is now for teams 2-7 to keep as close of a distance as possible. And that means getting as many points where you should as possible. So it's just difficult for the rest of the league right now. But so you have to hope that sooner than later, and this is everything, this is why people watch the Prem, and this is why the Prem is, I feel like, regarded as one of the better, probably the toughest league in the world, is because eventually a Huddersfield or a Brighton will go into Manchester City and beat them, and that's all it takes to slow down a little bit, and then we've got a real title race. Right now we got a race for second.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, looking at City in the near future, they play Huddersfield Town at Huddersfield Town. They play Southampton at home. They play West Ham at home. And then they play United at Old Trafford. I don't see any of those teams except for, obviously, Manchester United. That'll be a big game. But, I mean, Ken, Mal's just going to set up shop in that one.
He's going to set up shop and he's going to end up getting his ass kicked.
Yeah.
Very well. That could be like a 6-0 if Mal goes in and just sets up shop and says, come at me. Because Man City only knows one style of play, and that's come at you.
Well, we will preview that game when it's time. But Manchester City takes the 3 points again, keeps their commanding lead over the Prem. Probably should have had a red card in this one, but when everything's rolling your way, they just keep winning. Jesus scores in this one, and obviously De Bruyne. Jesus now, I think, is tied with the lead.
Was that a Ric Flair celebration he was doing, too? I mean, it was a terrible impersonation of Ric Flair, but...
Yeah, he's scoring goals, Kenny.
Yeah, when you're
goals.
Doing that, who cares? Yeah.
And it's another one of those balls where they square it right in front of the goalie, and then you can walk it in. Like, that goal they're scoring constantly is ridiculous. His eighth goal of the season. But, yeah, City on fire, and they continue their drubbing.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny when the announcer, or the commentator of the game, said that David Silva, knowing that Jesus is just in a better position, passes it off. No, it has nothing to do with that. David Silva is assuming that he's going to get another chance in 38 seconds to score a goal of his own. So it doesn't matter who scores these goals.
Yeah, because you're going to get another chance. Yeah, sure, like, that's a good way to look at it. Speaking of chances and scoring, Ken, Liverpool with a nice win over Southampton, 3-0. I think this is their best game of the season. What do you think?
Salah showed up like crazy. But honestly, the team showed up.
Yeah,
they were first to the ball. They were more aggressive. They looked like they wanted it more. And they're just playing a Southampton team that right now is very, very happy being right above mediocre and just knowing that they're supposed to take a loss. But when you come to play like this, like Liverpool showed up today, I mean, it's back to when they beat Arsenal 4-0. Like, you're not going to be – it's going to be tough to beat them. It doesn't matter if it's the Southampton or an Arsenal or a United. I mean, the game's going to be exciting at that point. My only complaint about the Liverpool squad was the fact that Lovren was back in there. And I can't think that a fan in this world is thinking, yeah, I'm glad to see Lovren back on the pitch. No, you got to be kidding me. I would hope that that Klopp has, like, this was like a farewell game for him, because January's coming soon, and I would imagine that he's going to have to rehaul that defense, and Lovren should be the first one packing up his bags.
Yeah, they still get the win here. Southampton doesn't put a shot on target, and Liverpool runs riot. Salah now, with his two goals in this one, both excellent finishes.
Really, really good finishes.
I think he was listening to this podcast, Ken, when I said that he wasn't finishing the ball well and he was missing a lot of open chances, and he said, well,
it's so weird because the first one he kind of takes out of nowhere, just shoots it from the corner of the 18 to the opposite side of the goal.
Yeah,
and then the second one is just like a little dink shot over the keeper from a fabulous pass from Coutinho. By the
way. Yeah, the Coutinho ball. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, they looked really great today.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think that being a Liverpool fan would be so difficult, Ken. I mean, I'm talking to an Arsenal fan, but the ups and downs of Liverpool, I think, are the most extreme in the league. To go from, you know, winning 4-0 to losing 3-0 to winning 3-0 and then losing 2-0 to a bad team, like, that's really tough.
That's Klopp's style. That rock and roll football that he always talks about, or that he talked about at least coming into England. I mean, he doesn't tell a lie. I mean, he's telling you the truth, exactly what's going to happen. We're going to do the same thing every single week.
Yep.
We're going to try to score goals, and when we don't, we're going to hope that my crap defense can stop other teams from scoring, which they can't. And that's why you lose games you shouldn't lose, because the defense isn't there. When you play like Liverpool plays, you have to have a solid back four, and they don't have that right now.
Yeah, I mean, they are picking up results of late. Ever since the Tottenham drubbing, they have a 3-0 win, a 4-0 win, and now another 3-0 win.
Yeah, they look good.
Yeah, so they are picking up a little bit of steam. It's not too late to get in the Champions League conversation, obviously, and they find themselves in fifth place, 4 points behind United in second. 12 points behind first, obviously, but I mean, you never know.
One point out of Champions League. I mean,
yeah. So I think we've talked about this before, but tactically they stopped sending their outside backs so far forward as to give cover to their not so great center backs. So I think that they've turned a page. They're still doing zonal marking on kicks, which I think is terrible, but. They get their result here, 3-0. Salah is at the top of the table, Ken, in terms of goals scored with 9, and he is...
The dude is good. He's just scoring goals. I mean...
Yep. And it's another former Chelsea player, Ken, where you have Salah and De Bruyne, both previously of Chelsea, that are blowing up, but... moving to the Chelsea game from here, Chelsea didn't seem to mind missing either one of them as they won 4-0 over a really ailing West Brom team.
Yeah. I mean, it was just messed up from jump for West Brom. I mean, Chelsea, they were just on fire. I would say as long as Fabregas and Hazard are playing and will continue to play the way that they are right now, it's going to be difficult, because those two in the midfield, they're... releasing a lot of pressure from not only the defense, but off of the strikers as well. They're scoring their own goals. So, I mean, it's just, they're a good, solid team right now, and they're just doing what Conte teams do.
Yep.
Stringing wins together and making it look simple in the process, unfortunately for me and you and everyone else that is smart enough to not be a Chelsea fan.
Yeah, Hazard runs rampant in this one, sets up Morata. Don't worry, Tyler, I'll give you a shot. Morata with a nice finish for the first goal, and then Hazard. You know, Marcus Alonso, man, he's been excellent this year. Yeah. I mean, he has to be. He's playing wing back mostly, and he's putting these crosses in. But he had a nice goal, and you have to say that he has easily been the best outside back, I think, this season. I don't think it's close.
I'd say so.
With his impact, Alonso with an excellent game here. But just on the flip side of the coin before we let Tyler in, West Brom, Ken, I think they could be a candidate to go down.
You think so?
Yeah, they're at 10 points right now. They're in 17th place. They are 1 point clear of the drop zone, and as much as they're not playing well, they're putting a lot of pressure on Pulis, who doesn't play a pretty style anyways. Usually he's gritty enough to keep his teams up, but they're getting smoked right now.
If we're going to get into a relegation talk, I just don't see. I think right now the bottom three clubs, I would not be surprised to see it stay like this for the rest of the season.
You don't think you don't think Crystal Palace has got a little pluck?
I don't think so.
You think they're just too deep?
I think that right now the gap to be safe is it's 5 points already.
Yeah,
I mean they were talking about teams
on
ESPN or NBC Sports today how like, you know, they're still fine. If it gets to 8, then, you know, then it's a problem. But no, I think it's a problem right now. And
oh, it's a problem.
And the biggest issue is now. I mean, we might as well just go into Crystal Palace game since we're going to be talking about them. But
well,
we'll give Tyler a chance here.
Tyler, how do you feel, bud?
I felt great. It's not a top caliber team that they beat, but the way in which they handled it was great. And hopefully, you guys watched the game, or if you didn't watch it, you at least saw the highlights. That Morata flick to set up the Hazard goal was one of the sickest things I saw this weekend.
I thought one of the sickest things I saw this weekend was Morata's dumb Archer celebration that he won't stop doing.
Sour grapes, my friend. Sour grapes. And you know,
on the subject
of Morata, I just want to let you guys know that he is currently tied for second or third. Hold on, let me make sure I got my
stats. If you're talking about goals, it's second.
Second. And he's tied for fourth in number of assists.
And assists, yeah.
So you guys can't argue that this guy's not the complete package, because if you compare, I actually sat down and crunched the numbers. I think there's only one person that is above him when you take his where he sits in assists and where he sits in goals, and you average that out into, let's say, a complete package for somebody that's a setup person and a shot taker.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best people in the Premier League right now.
Hey, and I'm not saying that.
It's unassailable at this point.
The only thing I've ever said, and I will continue to say until he decides to prove anyone wrong that has two eyes that watch the screen, is that he is a virtual no-show when it comes to playing big clubs in England. And that's a fact, Mr. Statistic. He is an absolute no-show when it comes to playing clubs that are inside the top six. And it's happened every single time they've played a club inside the top six this season, which I think is 3 times, in which those are the worst 3 games he's ever played.
Well, one, he was only on for the first 20 or 25 minutes.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
And he's also missed games, so let's not forget that these statistics include him not playing the full complement of games, which other people that are higher above him have.
Well, almost everybody on the list, actually. I'm looking at the list now. Almost everybody on the list, except for Lukaku, has missed at least 100 minutes. Just saying.
Did Kane miss? How many did Kane miss?
Remember, Kane missed a stretch of a couple weeks. But anyway, I mean, I see what you're saying. Morata right now has 812 minutes played. The only person who has more, we'll say, points than him, as in goals and assists, is Leroy Sané, who has 6 goals, 6 assists, and that's in 760 minutes. So you can get an idea that yes, he's above average minutes played.
That he's not a good player. I have no problem like saying that he is a good player and he will bring a lot to Chelsea. But right now, you don't pay £70 million to have someone go beat up the bottom table. You pay £70 million to have that guy show up against the big teams, and he hasn't right now. When he does, you won't hear anything from me.
I kind of disagree with that. I think you do pay to beat up the younger. Or the
70
younger,
million?
I mean, what's a price tag now? That's what these guys are paying.
I'm just saying, like, he doesn't show up when it comes to big clubs. And I guess that you're a Man U fan, so you take the Mourinho approach where it doesn't matter. We'll set up shop against any club that could beat us, so it doesn't matter if we score goals or not. But that's just that's my opinion of it. And
Ken, that's not how I play FIFA, okay? I try to win every single game. I do not set up shop against teams that might beat me, and I resent the fact that you would say that. But yeah, I actually think that I think Morata has been better than I was figuring he was going to be. He has a personality that's a little bit douchey, which I kind of like because I like disliking players from rival teams. It just makes it better
for me.
It's
the beer that he drinks on the way home from every game when they win that's given him such big loads of energy to score the score goal next week, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, he does enough, and he had a nice game in this one, and I think, unfortunately, that he is creeping into the conversation as one of the top forwards. But you're absolutely right. When it comes to good defenses, they shut him down because he's soft. We'll see if he can adapt his game, because right now his statistics tell us that he can.
I've already said that I do feel like eventually he will figure it out, how to not have to be physical with these big defenses. I've already said that. So I think that Tyler is just, you know, not listening to me when I just blatantly hate on Morata. It's not all from a place of, you know, just being annoyed that he's super douchey and I can't stand him. But the fact of the matter is, and you know, again, until I see different, when a good defense comes into town, Morata don't want to play.
All right, well, I'll just close out my little segment by just being happy seeing Hazard, you know, continuing his form, because he's been up and down. You know, he has a brilliant game, and then he has a game where he's almost non-existent. And this is 2 or 3 weeks in a row now, if you don't count the break, where he's been on point, and he's a big factor in our offense. So if he stays on point, Morata continues to perform, and how do you say that guy's name? Sek?
old man Sek.
Old man Sek.
Old man Sek is what you called him, and I liked it.
Yeah, if he stays in the,
he's
know,
been really good.
Up the midfield.
He has been good.
You know what? It's Conte though that does that. The defensive midfielder, N'Golo Conte, allows Cesc Fabregas to do nothing else. He does all the defensive work because he's that good, and he allows Cesc to be slow. And not
just create things. Yeah,
yeah. He allows that to happen, which is not, I mean, that's good coaching. You're using the tools that you have. So, yeah, I mean, it's a nice win for Chelsea. You wanted to move to the relegation fight that is Crystal Palace, Ken. I think that's a good idea.
I didn't want to move to it. We were just talking about it for so long. We might as well.
Yeah, and we should, because that was a really good game, the Crystal Palace-Everton game.
It was a really good game. I don't know if you have anything like
dumb goals. Some
out
dumb
of the ordinary
goals
to say, but you know, well, the PK.
I mean, that was terrible.
That was such a dive. Niasse.
That was
definitely
terrible.
Dove. He should have gotten a yellow for simulation.
Yeah, that was terrible, man. Like when you see a guy go down like that, the refs have been really good in the last 5 years. Of even sometimes when there are fouls, if you go down like a clown, they don't call it.
Right. Like, he definitely, you know, like acted that out, and he was barely touched.
Yeah, that was bad. I would be really mad if I were a Palace fan, if there are any Palace fans left.
Well, you have to be because that cost them a win. I mean, minus the defense. Like, if you are up a goal, you know, for a meaningful amount of time, you go up 1-0, then you go up 2-1. I mean, you should be especially playing an Everton team that has no confidence, no manager. No real plan, it seems like, when they go out onto the pitch. I mean, every team in the league should be thinking that when Everton comes to town or they go to Everton, that, oh, we're getting 3 points out of these clowns because they have no leadership right now. So when something happens like that to where a referee decides a draw, you know, it can kind of be a deciding factor in a draw. Mm-hmm. That kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth, especially when you're Crystal Palace at the bottom of the table and you're trying to fight your way out of it makes it hard.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would say also that Everton, you know, they have to be disappointed again. I mean, they have higher aspirations than this. Crystal Palace has 5 points on the season, Ken. They're showing a little bit of pluck now. This was at home. And I'd say another big loser in this game, and, I mean, basically in the whole setup of the way the season's gone, is actually England, Ken, because Wilfred Zaha was born in England, raised in England, and by all rights should be playing for England, but they didn't choose him in the last few years, and he ended up going with another one of his nationalities that he's eligible for. I want to say, I think Ivory Coast, maybe? Sure. But he scores a goal in this one. He's been their lifeblood of their comeback, we'll call it, of Crystal Palace's comeback.
Yeah, and now, if he can continue playing the way he's been playing, Benteke came back for this game. I mean, he had an embarrassing scuff of a shot, but that's just rusty, though.
Yeah, he's off.
But I think the difference in Crystal Palace is going to be exactly how long does it take Benteke to regain form and regain game fitness to where he can actually be a resource to Zaha. Because you get him, Zaha, who was the other guy on the other, like Townsend on the other side? I mean, that's a...
Yeah, Townsend rolls a little bit sometimes.
I mean, that's a pretty... That's a good enough front three to not get relegated. It's just a matter of how long is it going to take for the three of them to gel. More importantly, how long is it going to take Benteke to start scoring goals like he should.
Tyler, you got something?
Real quick, I just want to say about his decision to go play for Ivory Coast. I think anybody that can do that should make that decision because that's where the legend Didier Drogba came from.
Oh my God. Mute yourself, please.
There we go.
Yeah, it is the Ivory Coast for him. And I think that's a dynamic player that would be really good for England, really complement what they have set up, but they blew it with that one. Zaha is Crystal Palace's hope for you know, getting out of the drop zone. Right now they have 5 points and safety is at 10, so we will see what happens with that.
Maybe another big story coming out of this is, again, another week goes by and Everton still have no manager and there's still too many names being thrown around. It's almost like, do they even have a guy they want to get right now?
Yeah,
like, I don't understand, that's pathetic. This is a big-time club that spent $140 million-plus sack their manager and you didn't have a plan B? I mean, come on. That's bad timing. I mean, I do think that Koeman deserved a little bit more time. He had just been victim of very, very poor results and I think victim of poor statements in the media, kind of alluding to the fact that he may or may not have cared about what was going on. So maybe he had to go, but to fire him and still be what? Now we're 3 weeks out? Maybe.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Four weeks?
Including an international break.
Yeah,
including
like,
an international
break. You don't
break.
Have somebody that's set in stone solidly to take it over? I mean, at this point, you might just say Unsworth is the manager for the season. I mean, these guys need something. The players that came to play for Everton, they don't just come for the money. They come for some type of stability. Oh, yeah, I want to play for Koeman, or I want to play for a team that's budding and, you know, has a great path and a great vision of what we're going to be like, and they feel like I'm a pivotal piece to the puzzle here. And now you have these guys managerless, and the owners seemingly have no idea what to do.
Yeah, I completely agree. They're a mess, and they need to get it sorted out. I don't want to spend too much time on Everton, Crystal Palace game, because we got a big game I want to cover, obviously, Ken. We'll go to AFC Bournemouth 4, Huddersfield Town 0. Huddersfield's been getting smoked ever since they beat United. I don't want to say too much about these games, like I said.
That's just Eddie Howe doing Eddie Howe stuff.
Yep, Eddie Howe's got his team rolling again in Bournemouth. They're in 13th now. Yep, he had himself a nice little run here, and I like to see it. They went 4-0. Huddersfield drops a little bit. Anything you want to add besides a nice Calum Wilson hat trick here?
No, 4-0. Eddie Howe rolling, just like I knew he would.
Yep, well done, Eddie Howe. Another team that is rolling and a manager connected with Everton. Burnley beat Swansea City 2-0. Ken, they are in 7th place, tied in points with Arsenal and Liverpool is Burnley.
Everyone's saying that Burnley's the pride of the season so far, and I would have to agree. I mean, who would have thought that old Burnley would be 7?
Yeah, you have to be impressed by that, and that's probably why Sean Dyche is having such a tough time deciding. I mean, if he wants to go to Everton, they got the resources, they have the prestige, but they're in 16th place.
I think the longer this thing goes on, I don't even want to go. I wouldn't want to go to Everton. They seem sloppy and disorganized. So I think Everton should just be, they're going to just be left to figure it out with Unsworth, I think.
We will be covering that one. We'll see what happens. Watford beats West Ham United 2-0. I actually want, you know what, Ken, I want to talk about this one after the Arsenal-Tottenham game, because I got a little something to say, but I really want to get a lot of time in on the Arsenal game. So Arsenal, Kenley, played Tottenham this week.
And I would probably say the only guy not surprised in an Arsenal victory is yours truly, my friends. I told you last week it'd be simply just a win. Simply
you
a win.
You definitely did. So this week I talked to Dr. Pete.
How is he doing? Did you pick him up yet?
He's good.
Is the bottle empty?
So his wife gave birth to a boy, and we have a new Tottenham fan in the world.
It's good that he gets brought into the world knowing his true place in London, because Pochettino doesn't know his true place in London yet, but maybe now he does. And this baby, this newborn baby, this cute, adorable baby, I'm sure that it is, can be brought in knowing that Tottenham will always be one step behind.
you're so dumb. Anyway, so I talked to Pete before his son was born, and I told him, you know, Tottenham is the better team in my opinion, and has been for the last 18 months or so. But Arsenal, two or three times a year, will just show up with one of these performances where they're unbeatable. It doesn't matter who plays them; they are unbeatable.
Well,
I know
it was at home.
I truly believe
we're unbeaten in the last 17.
Yeah, I tried to prepare Dr. Pete for it as much as I could, and I think, you know, his new son must have been disappointed with the display of his of Kane, Dele Alli.
Well, okay, Kane and Dele Alli. I think Mourinho spoke to this perfectly before the games even started, with his disgust with the treatment of Phil Jones, which I think, we don't have time to talk about it today, but I think that that might be more of a growing story. The stuff that he was saying sounds very terrible with all of the shots.
Giving him injections to play an international
exactly.
friendly.
So he said, anyone who called out of international duty, I would imagine they're not be playing this weekend. And who is in the starting lineup but Kane and Dele Alli, two schmucks that called out due to injury and couldn't play. So not only are they arguably two of the freshest people in the league on the pitch this weekend because they haven't played in, what, 12 days, 13 days?
Yeah.
But they're both injured, obviously injured. They're both wrapped to hell and back, you could tell, all around the leg. And the bigger question is, Pochettino, like, what did you buy Llorente for if you don't trust him?
He's bad. He hasn't been good.
But what I'm saying is, you have other players. Son, Llorente, you trust a 40% Kane over 100% Son or Llorente? I mean, it was noticeable. And then you wait till the 75th minute to take him out? I think it was bad management. And I think it just shows, you know? And the bigger thing is, ladies and gentlemen, Mesut Ozil.
Yeah,
Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, his deliveries. He showed up for this game,
playing defense, tackling people. Yeah. I think he elbowed somebody. I mean,
whoa.
If he wasn't showing the grit, and again, it's not his fault that he's a genius. And sometimes it looks like he's doing nothing.
No. He has games where he is lethargic.
Yeah,
and
that's
bad.
True. You're right. But
and
not
bad.
Today.
But not in this game. He was absolutely superb. Arsenal was superb. Like I said, two or three times a year, they just show up and they're unplayable.
Exactly.
Just...
And what happened this weekend was exactly that. The defense was fantastic, consistent, and it was unbreakable. They couldn't break them down. And then you had – today, on the weekend, they were, Tom. I'm not saying always are they. I'm just
I'm just laughing because I think we're going to lose every Tottenham fan that we have.
They were. They were completely was it because Kane was injured? Maybe. Possibly. Was it because Dele Alli didn't show up the game? I mean, but he hasn't shown up in a couple weeks.
He has only he hasn't showed up this season. He showed up in the Real Madrid game, and that was it. He has not been good. You need a secondary scorer. We always talk about this. You need a secondary scorer in this league if you want to be a title contender or win anything, and he has been bad.
Right.
He thought he was going to Barcelona. I don't know. Maybe he's packing his bags or something, but – he needs to put the work back in, because he has been a real problem. He's lucky Erickson has picked up the slack, because he's been bad.
Yeah, it was a massive welcome back for Mustafi. I mean, he's back in the club now. He brought a whole other element to defense.
What a header, man.
What a header. Was he offside? It's very close. It's arguable. It's very close. If I'm going to be...
Talk about Mustafi. Was Mustafi offside?
Was Mustafi offside? They're arguing that his shoulder and his head was offside. It's close. It's arguable. It's arguable. But was the second one offside? Absolutely not. People saying that Lacazette's arm is offside. Can you score a goal with your arm? No, you cannot. Does not count. It's not offside.
Yeah, it was super
tight. It's not offside. And just the Sanchez goal. I mean, the fact that he got a touch in before he blasted that over I can't even think of the guy's name right now. I'm so high from this
Lurie?
Win. Yeah,
Lurie?
Hugo. Old Hugo's head. I mean, Hugo had to get out of the way.
It was a nice finish.
Yeah, no choice. But yeah, I mean, Arsenal just looked great. And to your point, we show up like this every once in a while. And the problem is there's a reverse side to Arsenal that shows up. And until they stop playing to the level of their competition, they're going to find themselves in a fight for fourth. Every once in a while finishing third. Every once in a while finishing in fifth.
Yeah. I mean, with Arsenal in this one, you're talking about the Lacazette goal. It is very, very tight.
He set up.
I'm sorry. Yeah, he set the goal up.
But they're saying his arm made him offside. That's impossible that your arm makes you offside, because you can't score a goal with your arm.
I'm really surprised that he wasn't called off, because he was the only player in that space. You know what I mean? Like, the person keeping him, quote-unquote, onside was Sanchez, who was 20 yards across the field. And usually the ref, when they see a player in that much clear...
He wasn't clear. He had a defender near him. Right on him. He passed the ball.
I'm watching it. He's through, man. He's behind two players. He's in the space behind. And he's kept on... If he's on, he's kept on by Deiveson Sanchez. It's tight. It's super tight.
But you can't score a goal with your arm. His whole entire body is onside.
That's tight.
Can we touch on Pochettino's pre-match press conference speech?
Sure.
I think that this is very important, and then we'll get into whatever else you want to get into. But Pochettino comes out and says that Tottenham is in the middle of what he calls a movement, and they're in a different stage than Arsenal is in their movement, and he would rather have what Tottenham has right now than the trophies that are the FA Cups that Arsenal has. He's on the hunt for real, quote, real trophies. You can't really use the term real trophies until you have some trophies. And that's not a place of anything that's trying to sound mean or, you know, just, you know, downplaying Tottenham for what they've done, because I think that they have been able to bring their club up into an international level, like, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But you have zero trophies. So what exactly do you mean, real trophies?
You know, I believe that you, of all people, have the platform to make that statement. Being an Arsenal fan who suffered through, 8 years without a trophy at all.
With nothing.
And, like, yeah, and
you'll take any trophy.
You'll take any trophy. Absolutely. I absolutely believe that.
And Pochettino, you are speaking from a place that is delusion. It can only be spoken as delusion, as you thought that you would have a trophy by now based on what you've done. And honestly, I thought you would have too. My worry right now for Tottenham, if I could have any worry, which, mark my word, I have no worries when it comes to Tottenham. It can only get – the worse they get, the better it gets for me, believe you. But the way that they showed their complete and utter reliance on Harry Kane this weekend, it almost worries me as a fan, and I'd be thinking about this. Is this the ceiling for right now for Tottenham? Because without Harry Kane, we can't win games. If you can't win consistent games without Harry Kane – they did last season, but they're not doing it. They're not showing that they can be consistent game winners without Harry Kane. You're not going to win a league title like you said you're going to win. Like Pochettino said, I'm hunting for the league or the Champions League. With one striker? That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, with this Tottenham project that they've built, I mean, I've been very impressed.
That's what he called
it,
a project,
them.
Not a movement, a project.
Yeah.
No, I'm impressed too. They've done a lot of things, and I think Pochettino is the center of it.
He is.
But you can't possibly, you cannot believe, you could not have gone to bed that night thinking that, yeah, you know, I meant what I said out there. I'd rather have no trophies while I hunt for real ones.
I have to be honest that that it reminds me of the stuff that Wenger used to say during the trophyless drought, where he would talk about, you know, the players playing well and all this other stuff. Like, and then he finally, you know, he took it upon himself to take the FA Cup and the Carling Cup at the time seriously, because he understands that the fans sometimes, sure, the FA Cup is, I mean, you can call it hokey or whatever you want to call it, because big teams a lot of times at that point in their season are in other competitions. But a trophy is a trophy, Ken. You know,
exactly.
Last year,
when you go 8 years with nothing,
a trophy's a trophy.
Make a trophy up. Put two teams out there and say whoever wins gets this plastic, you know, tree of broccoli. Put a name on it. The fans are going to be wanting something eventually, and you know, you can. It's up to you as a manager to tout that thing up as the greatest thing ever. But then you know, you talk about the power shift that everyone talks about in London when it comes with Arsenal and Tottenham. And yes, did we wait 3.5 years to beat Tottenham? Absolutely. Did it taste great this weekend when it happened? You know it did. You know it did.
You were insufferable.
You know it did.
Insufferable.
But the power shift, I mean, what? In the last 20 years, the only thing that can be really shown as a massive power shift is Tottenham finally finished above Arsenal last season. But that took, what, 20 years? There's no power shift. There's just what I can say, like, form and, you know, maybe the Arsene Wenger not being able to mentally get these guys prepared for big games. But this weekend they showed different, and if we could play like this for 38 weeks a season, if we could play like this 32 weeks a season.
That doesn't happen, though. That's the point. I mean,
but no, it needs to start happening, so we need to use this as you can use losses as a push for your season, and you can use wins as a push for your season. And if Arsenal knows what they're doing, if Arsene Wenger has any type of want to win anything this season, he'll use this as a motivational push to continue in the season. This is how we can play.
Yeah, I would agree with that part of it. That's the whole point, though, of Arsenal, though. They can show up like this. I will defend Tottenham in a couple different ways. For one thing, they're still above Arsenal on the table.
Of course.
And for another thing, they were playing a rival away. And lastly, I will say that even so, Ken, Tottenham's going to put together results. They're still a top three team in this league.
Consistently better right now, no question.
Especially, yes.
No question. They're going to be consistently better. And
they're going to be consistently
better. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't finish above Arsenal this season. I already said that in the beginning a couple weeks ago before the season even started. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I'm just saying that, you know, Pochettino really, he talked a lot. And I think that might have been maybe one of the issues going into this game. He really talked a lot, and it begs a lot of answers from him when you play the way you did at the weekend. Like,
yeah, it does. I mean, they're stumbling a little bit now. They also are playing better teams. I mean, they played United, lost to United 1-0, and they lost to Arsenal away, and like you said, Arsenal has set up a fortress at home, which is what great teams do. It's just whether or not Arsenal, again, can show up to all the other games and not lose to Stoke.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And to this point, they have not shown that. They haven't shown that in the last 12 years. But
yeah. So we'll see what happens here. Yeah. Arsenal's still in the Carabao Cup, right? I think they are.
I couldn't tell you, honestly. I don't know.
I think they are. I think Tottenham's the only big team that's been eliminated from the Carabao Cup. But yeah, so another trophy for them not to win. But yeah, I
it's
do worry
real
about
anyway,
that.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I do worry about that for Tottenham, them being one of those teams where they have Harry Kane, Dele Alli. I mean, right now, Eriksen, you talk about a guy who fits in at Barcelona. I don't think Dele Alli fits in his style as much as Eriksen does. I mean, Eriksen passes and Eriksen shoots. Like, he fits exactly the role of, you know, that Barcelona playmaker in the middle that they would like to have. That would worry me, and Harry Kane is working himself into a number 9 position at Real Madrid as Benzema stumbles. And, you know, Real Madrid gets itchy feet with that stuff, Ken. They're going to look for the best striker in the world, and Harry Kane's at least top 5, probably top 3.
I'd say so, but I'd be surprised to see Harry Kane leave, unless he feels that Tottenham don't have a good enough plan or vision to win the league in the next couple of years. Unless he stops believing that Tottenham can win the league, I think he stays until that thought crosses his mind in a very serious manner.
Yeah, I do like to see him in the Prem. I like to see him play. I like his development, and I think he's good for the league. Yeah, I like his development in the league, and I really wouldn't like to see him go to Real Madrid. But you know what, Ken? When a team's coming and they're offering to double your salary, your already sizable salary, and they're offering, you know, Champions League glory, it's going to come down to exactly what you said, which is how long does he believe in the project? You know, if they finish in fifth this year? You know, fifth place, the difference between sixth place and second place will probably be 3 points.
Well, right now it's one.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll probably be that tight. And what if they finish in sixth? Like, that can happen the way this league's set up right now. You know,
you're exactly right. There's a lot of intangibles that, you know, as the season progresses and, you know, as other teams in other parts of the world get, you know, quote unquote, their itchy feet about needing just to buy a big name, Harry Kane's going to show up on a lot of their lists. So, yeah, I mean, and then, you know, what happens with Tottenham? Who knows? I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. We're not going to really be able to get into, Ken, the David Moyes situation at West Ham as they lost 2-0 and he immediately came out. Yeah.
Tom, sorry to interrupt. Quick question before you guys move on. So I started this game about 15 minutes late, and the NBC app lets you rewatch it the following day. So I played it so I could see the first 15 minutes. When did they start doing Super Bowl-esque intros to soccer matches in the Premier League? They had like a voiceover guy. You know, before a Super Bowl match, they have two voiceover people talk about each team and how they made it here and why it's so epic. They did like an epic rundown before this game. And is that typical, or is it just because it's the big rivalry in North London? I mean, I had never seen that before, and it like got me a little pumped for the match, and I don't think I'd seen that before. Like talking about how this goes back, you know, so many years, and
you were pumped because you were finally watching some of London's elite go at it.
Oh my god!
Not that. Well, I think it was Chelsea.
It was the game of the weekend. It was a lunchtime kickoff in England, right, Ken? It was the 7:30.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, when it comes to those games, they essentially get set up like Monday Night Football games. Same with the 12:30 matches. They get a little more pub because they're the only game on. They're the primetime game. The lunchtime kickoff there, but I hadn't really noticed it. I almost never watch the build up, almost never.
Yeah, no. This was actually the first time that I'd ever seen it. I usually come to the game as soon as it starts, or maybe a few minutes into it. But it was pretty epic.
Yeah, the commentators. Not to be too disrespectful, Ken. I don't know how you feel about this, but the commentators, they usually don't add that much for me, especially pregame. At halftime, sometimes they have a couple interesting things to say. But overall, I would say that I'm not sold on them.
Clarify real quick. This was like a pre-recorded intro that they made. It wasn't it had like stock footage and everything. It was
like all fancy.
Oh, like just on the TV. Blitz. Like, so they weren't seeing that at the stadium.
No. This was
that's just for TV. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's just to get
the 7:30. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's because I don't know. They had nothing else to say.
But yeah, I mean. A big build-up for a big game, obviously.
I'm not opposed to watching the games on mute, and sometimes I have to watch the games on mute, so just because I have no choice.
Yeah, I got babies in the room.
Yeah, or it's late at absolutely. Night when I'm watching it, and I'm trying to be respectful for the people sleeping in the house.
Yeah, absolutely, and I have to do the same thing. I miss a lot of commentary, and I don't get a lot of halftime shows because we watch a lot of recorded games, Ken.
I will tell you, though, that this one was not watched in mute. Me and my two-year-old were jumping up and down the couch. I'm just going to be fully honest. And for the Tottenham fans out there, I'm sorry. Let me live this moment because Arsenal has won the London Derby, and we have a couple weeks of just – I'm going to live on this, and I'm going to live on the fact that Me and the little goon just jumping up on the couch screaming, "Go Arsenal."
That's hilarious.
It was fantastic. I'm sorry that it has to come at the expense of Tottenham. Parentheses, no, I'm not sorry.
You are so not. You're so not.
It was too good. Right. It was too good. But hey, I have one thing.
Have your day.
Yeah, West Ham.
Have your day,
We do need to talk about West Ham really quickly because David Moyes, back in managerial position in England. I love David Moyes. For whatever reason, I got a little soft spot for him. Maybe it's because I feel like he was hard done by Man U.
He was not.
But if he's going to go into West Ham and not drop the hammer on Joe Hart and get him out of there, they will be relegated because he flat out sucks. He got beat again near post. Beat again.
Yep.
Are you kidding me? Get him out of there. Make a big move. Make a big move and say, I don't care if I have to put our third string striker in that keeper jersey. You will not play for me right now. You go out and practice and show me you can block something. And then you can come back into the game. And England should take note, too. Get him off. Yeah, he's terrible.
You know what, though, Ken? You were talking about David Moyes. And before, when we were talking about him, I was like, oh, yeah, I was remembering his Everton days. I've been reading up on him, and the feelings of frustration came back immediately as I was reading about his Manchester United season. Okay, first of all, he finished in 7th place with a team that won the league by 10 points the year before. And I'm aware, before you say anything else, I'm aware that it was a team that Fergie built for Fergie systems and Fergie style of play, and in doing so,
and he sat in the stands like roles. The ghost of Christmas past.
And there's plenty of pressure on there that was always going to be there, but I don't feel like he was hard done. He finished in 7th. They asked him
Sign
to
him
finish
a
in the 5-year
contract, Tom. A
he finished in 7th.
If it contract. He wasn't even given the benefit of the doubt to like go in and, you know, get a club that can play under the tactics that he plays and buy a couple of players that he's comfortable having there. He didn't get the respect that any other manager gets. He brought in Fellaini. Was it?
He complained about that too. Well, you didn't get Cesc Fabregas because he was playing for Barcelona at the time, and he was still playing for them.
I'm not saying
and you didn't
get
Gareth
everyone.
Bale because
hey,
no, he,
I'm not going
to
get heated
was...
up over David Moyes. I don't really care that much about
right,
David
well,
Moyes.
Let me finish it then because we can get into that another time whether or not he was hard done. But he also went over to Spain, where I think it was Villarreal, and he
right.
sucked horribly.
Yeah, he did.
There.
No, he did.
He got fired in like 4 months, and then he came back and got Sunderland relegated after getting some money to buy players that he liked. He didn't get a ton, it was Sunderland, but he got him relegated. Like, I don't know.
Well, if
he
does not
been good
if
in
he does
years.
Not take Joe Hart out of the keeping position, he will get West Ham. He will be responsible for the West Ham relegation too.
All right. Yep. West Ham right now sits in 18th place. With a manager that got relegated horribly last year. I'm pretty sure Sunderland finished in last. I'm trying to remember.
I think they did finish in last, yes.
He got relegated last year. It could be a repeat. It could be a two-peat here of him getting relegated. He might be one of those guys that's a trivia question later. What manager got relegated back-to-back seasons with two different teams? It could be David Moyes.
I'll take David Moyes.
And it could be Joe Hart. Could be Joe Hart the championship, Ken.
That's where he belongs. He's bad. He is so bad.
Yeah, he
Worst
is bad.
In the professional world right now, I think. Worst goalie.
I don't know enough about other leagues' goalies, but I will say that he probably is the worst goalie in the Prem right now. Alright, well, rounding up the league, Man City sits atop by 8 points over United, who are 1 point above Chelsea's third place. Chelsea's 2 points over Tottenham in fourth, and then a three-way tie for fifth, sixth, and seventh with Liverpool, Arsenal, and Burnley in that order. Little gap, and then there's Watford and everybody else. Overall, the league is shaping up. We need City to stumble, Ken. Anything you want to add about next week? We're tight on time.
I gotta tell you, I don't really have time to think about next week right now because I'm still just riding high off the victory of the weekend. So we'll leave it for next weekend.
Are you in a balloon too?
No, I wouldn't say in a balloon because that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my entire life.
I'm
on
really
a very
interested.
Very very excited run right now, and it was just a fantastic day for me.
Liverpool plays Chelsea next week, so that's a big one. That is at Liverpool. I'm really excited to see how the tactical changes go into effect there and how Conte plays against Liverpool, whether or not they're going to expose them some defensive issues or whether or not Liverpool is just going to roll. I think that'll be an interesting game.
Either thing can happen. I mean, Liverpool's shown that they're either going to show up or they're not going to show up. And Conte's shown that he can string the results together. So, I mean, I would say you have to say that, you know, you'd be surprised to see, you know, Chelsea not eke something out. It's just going to be, I would imagine, just how exciting it's going to be. I hope it's 0-0.
All right. Well, we'll see next weekend. I want to add one more shout out to the University of Chicago, Ken. We have a friend of the podcast, Coach Babst, is there, and they just made the Final Four after a shootout.
Woo!
So they can be our unofficial team. Good luck to Coach Babst and the University of Chicago. Besides that, I hope everybody has an awesome weekend. Anything to add, Ken?
I got nothing.
Tyler, anything to add?
No, sir.
All right. Have a good one, guys.